The Manhattan Contrarian has an ongoing series of posts entitled The Greatest Scientific Fraud of All Time. In it, the Contrarian argues, correctly I might add, that the intentional alteration of pre-existing temperature records to create a narrative of dangerous climate change is the greatest scientific fraud in world history, such that they argue no other scientific fraud in world history comes close to this one in scope or significance. However, the Contrarian now suggests that there could be another viable contender, and I might agree with them. Let's see what it is. I am David Arley Gates, and welcome to Created to Reign, a production of the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. The Cornwall Alliance is a ministry dedicated to helping fulfill the mandate God gave mankind in Genesis 1:28, to subdue and rule the earth in a way that enhances its fruitfulness, its beauty, and its safety for the glory of God and for the benefit of our neighbors. And in this corner is the challenger, the linear no-threshold hypothesis of causation of diseases from environmental factors, or better known as the linear no-threshold hypothesis. Dr. Edward Calabrese of the University of Massachusetts Amherst has argued that this hypothesis has been advanced by intentional fraud for over a century, and it has affected your life possibly more than anthropogenic climate alarmism. So, just what is the linear no-threshold hypothesis? It states that if a chemical or something else can be determined to be dangerous at any dosage, then it also is dangerous at all dosages, no matter how tiny. The linear part indicates that all additional risk is presumed to increase the risk of harm in a linear fashion, and the no-threshold part indicates that there is no level below which the risk is alleviated. Taken to the illogical extreme of the linear no-threshold method, anything that can be proven to be a danger at any level must be banned at all levels. Take common sugar, sucrose, for example. Dr. Frank Yu, professor of nutrition at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health, was quoted as saying, "The higher the intake of added sugar, the higher the risk for heart disease." If the linear no-threshold hypothesis was applied to sugar, all added sugar would have to be banned from everyone's diet because, according to the linear no-threshold hypothesis, there would be no dosage that does not increase the risk for heart disease. Although extremely rare, even water can pose a health risk, as water toxemia, or water poisoning, from consuming large quantities of water over short time periods, can disturb brain functions by creating an imbalance of electrolytes. Although no one has suggested that the linear no-threshold hypothesis be applied to added sugar or water, you can see how this hypothesis could be dangerous or even deadly if applied in the wrong case. But let me give you a common example where the limited no-threshold argument is clearly violated. Consider rat poison. No one wants rat poison in their food, and certainly no one wants to willingly take rat poison. It should be an obvious candidate where the limited no-threshold argument holds, correct? One class of rat poison, or rodenticides, is called coumarins, which are anticoagulants. Rodents do not have the ability to vomit, so they sample an unknown food and wait to see whether they or other rats get sick. These anticoagulants require that rodents ingest them in multiple doses, such that the toxicity builds over time, and rodents do not associate the consumption of the rodenticide with its toxicity. Anticoagulants kill rats and other rodents by blocking the vitamin K cycle, resulting in the inability to produce blood clotting factors. Tiny blood vessels are damaged, and internal bleeding results. The process takes several days to play out, and death comes when the exhausted rodent collapses due to hemorrhagic shock or severe anemia. Unfortunately, coumarins are toxic to mammals as well. Consequently, high doses of vitamin K1 are used as an antidote to anticoagulant toxicity from coumarin intake in both humans and other mammals. So why would you willingly take the anticoagulant Coumarin? In the 1920s, coumarins were discovered as a byproduct of moldy silage, originating from decaying sweet clover. By 1948, it became a common rodenticide. But 6 years later, it was accepted for human use as a blood thinner called warfarin, or also known by the brand name Coumadin, not to be confused with the original name for the anticoagulant, Coumarin. Although not really a blood thinner at a reduced dosage, warfarin inhibits blood coagulation and thus prevents blood clots in one's circulatory system. President Eisenhower was one of the first to be treated with warfarin after a heart attack back in 1955. Thus, in large quantities, warfarin is dangerous to humans, but in certain applications, it has proven useful in protecting some individuals from dangerous blood clots. Thus, there exists a threshold below which humans cannot just tolerate warfarin, but in some cases experience positive effects from it. In March of 2024, Dr. Calabrese published an article in the Journal of Occupational and Environmental Hygiene entitled "Cancer Risk Assessment, Its Wretched History, and What It Means for Public Health." I will link to this article in the show notes associated with this podcast. In the abstract, Dr. Calabrese also references two other research manuscripts that provide additional supporting information, as well as a 22-episode, 10-hour documentary from the Health Physics Society that discusses the historical and scientific foundations of cancer risk assessment and the linear no-threshold model. If this podcast stimulates your interest, then these articles and the documentary will prove invaluable in providing you with further information. The linear no-threshold model has been applied in risk assessment since the 1950s for determining radiation and chemical risk. As Dr. Calabrese notes, it is just a crude model that is applied when no scientific data exists to show harm, or lack thereof, at low dosages or exposure levels. Other models clearly exist, most notably the threshold model, where exposure below a given threshold is considered harmless, or the hormesis model, where very small doses can actually be beneficial, such as in the case of low-dose radiation, or the one we just discussed regarding warfarin. Fallacies of the linear no-threshold model have been known since just after it was introduced. The director of the Health and Safety Branch of the Atomic Energy Authority of the United Kingdom stated back in 1963, quote, "In the absence of knowledge about the effects of permissible doses on human beings, biologists have been forced into awkward and unhappy extrapolations from what is known about the effects of very large doses, and it has become conventional to interpret such information in the most pessimistic way, by assuming proportionality between dose and harmful effect at all levels. This, then, is the New Testament of radiological priestcraft, the comfortable and insidious worship of the straight line. After a while, the mathematics becomes more important than the biology, the dogma more important than those in whose service it has been enunciated," unquote. You can see the parallels between climate policy and linear no-threshold science policy. Both are invoked by overreaching bureaucrats and scientists wishing to further their careers. Both involve politically powerful entities who watch carefully over their domain and aggressively defend it. Both methods are widely used by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and other environmental organizations to further their goals. Both exhibit great potential to instill considerable fear throughout the population, thereby increasing the government's ability to affect actions and their concomitant responses, while imposing enormous costs on society for little or no benefit. Both also provide for the stimulation of significant opportunities for both funding and career advancement in academia. The two groups clearly read from the same playbook. But the difference might be that the use of the linear no-threshold model may be nearing an end. Scientists are beginning to speak out strongly about this issue, and their concerns are not covered up by the mainstream media with cries of no-threshold deniers. But the EPA and other environmental regulatory agencies of the federal government are showing no signs of backing down, as there is no incentive for them to rectify the failures of their past science policy. At least for now, search engines provide both sides of the discussion, and the opposition to rejecting the linear no-threshold model is not being actively silenced. Yet. Dr. Calabrese concludes his paper with the following. The scientists who promoted the linear no-threshold hypothesis were driven by ideological and self-serving professional biases that would lead to both falsifications of the research record and suppression of key scientific findings, all to establish the linear no-threshold model for hereditary and cancer risk assessment, replacing the threshold dose response model. This troubling history has now been revealed in a long series of peer-reviewed publications by the author and summarized in a broad conversational manner in this commentary. This troubling history remained hidden from regulatory agencies around the globe since its inception. These groups simply and uncritically accepted a flawed and corrupt history, assuming that it was accurate and reliable. Yet this path of historical ignorance led the United States Environmental Protection Agency and other national regulatory agencies to accept a dishonest foundation upon which to base and frame cancer risk assessment, terribly failing in their public service mission. So the fight for the title of greatest scientific fraud of all time continues to rage on. But maybe mainstream climate science will take a page from the linear no-threshold model and begin to reconsider the illogical assumptions and the aggressive enforcement behind alarmist climate science. If the linear no-threshold model can be abandoned in cases where it clearly does not apply, then maybe there is hope that irresponsible climate abatement policies too can be overturned. Or maybe the Environmental Protection Agency will take a page from the climate change debate and simply actively squelch all criticism of the linear no-threshold model. Time will tell, but we can pray as always that common sense and the truth ultimately prevail. Thank you for listening to Created to Reign. And as our way of saying thank you when you make a 100% tax-deductible donation of any amount and request it, we'll gladly send you a free copy of our new book, Climate and Energy: The Case for Realism, as long as our supply lasts. You can do that at www.cornwallalliance.org/donate. Until next time, I am David Arley Gates, and may God richly bless you.